Welcome back. Some time ago, I've been corresponding with a man who we share a mutual friend. He has written a fine, his first novel. It's one of these, and God knows I've had a lot of them on this show, all of them quite successful, these sort of late-in-life novelists. Mike, I don't know how to pronounce your last name. Is it Poel or Poel?
Polelli, three syllables, Rick.
Polelli, got it. It's spelled
Polelli, right?
Polelli, it's a cool name. It's on the cover of his first novel, The Mithras Conspiracy. It is MJ Polelli. Mike, let's talk before we talk about this fascinating book. Much of it's set in Rome, and it's kind of inspired by Da Vinci-like code mysteries, though I did not like the Da Vinci. I like your book much more than I like the Da Vinci code. How's that for a start?
That's a good start. I approve.
Yes.
One thing I wanted to say, Rick,
sure.
I heard your show with Julie Tracy and Urban Autism Solutions.
Yeah.
And as the father of a 46-year-old, now adult, autistic son.
Wow.
I'm fully sympathetic with what they're doing. I think it's commendable.
Well, you must know, not to spend all the time on autism here, but you must know then and must have confronted when your son or child was, you know, becoming an adult, the lack of services and roads for that child, yes?
Absolutely, yep. Rick. You wouldn't believe 30 years ago when Dan was diagnosed, people didn't really even know what it was.
I know.
Some people were saying artistic. Isn't it wonderful how artistic he is?
Oh, wow.
So no one really knew what autism was. So it's the good thing is there's been a lot of improvement, and it's really good to hear people like Julie and others who are continuing the campaign.
Well, one thing to end this, I hope your kid's good, and I wish that that they had been around and started this thing 40 years ago, so you could have taken advantage of it. Mike, you've had a fascinating pre-novel career. You are a local lad who went to Loyola Academy when it was still in Chicago, Loyola University. You graduated, and then, after a year abroad, went and graduated from Harvard Law School and wound up as a lawyer, and mostly as a professor of law. Did you enjoy that?
I did. I see my career as basically like two parts of the brain. The first part that I enjoyed was the left part of the brain, the analytical part. I had been a debater. I loved debate, loved politics, loved trial work. And so I enjoyed that part of it, and I especially enjoyed the teaching. I taught at Ball College of Law, and then most of my career is at John Marshall Law School.
Let me ask you, though, about writing. When, you know, everybody, and lawyers do, in the course of their working lives, a lot of writing. When did you start to get the fiction writing bug that has manifested itself in this fine first novel, The Mithras Conspiracy?
Well, I think it started out early with simply a love of words. I remember keeping a list of words when I was in high school, looking them up. It was also the fact that at Loyola Academy, we had to read almost a novel a week in the English program. But I think my interest in fiction developed when Scott Turow gave a talk after 1L came out, 1977.
That was his
I was a professor at John Marshall Law School, and I thought, I was there. I experienced the things he did. I felt many of the things he did, but I didn't write the book.
Right.
So I thought, you know, maybe there's something beyond legal articles with footnotes. I call it a life without footnotes. And although that wasn't fiction in itself,
right,
it showed how a lawyer and somebody who was writing a prose book was gradually making the transition to being a novelist. And then along came Presumed Innocent, 1987, a blockbuster book. And I think Scott Turow inspired me and I think other lawyers to give it a shot at novel writing.
Why do you think? I mean, you have John Grisham, too, and two of the best-selling authors of our era are former, well, I guess you're never former a lawyer. It's like being a Marine. What is it? Is there something inherent in the law that, I'm not saying all lawyers should sit down and start writing a novel, but those two are really good examples, I think. Is there something inherent in the way the law might make one think that lends itself to novel writing?
I think so. I think, you know, they're the obvious things that lawyers put a lot of time doing research.
Yep.
They're used to hard work.
Yeah.
Which you absolutely need. But that's not enough in itself.
No.
And I think the way I see it, when you're using the analytical skills of the left brain, it's everything's logic and reason. But that same quality of analysis, if it's used in a creative way, can be very helpful.
Hmm.
Because, for example, lawyers deal with circumstantial evidence. We know certain facts, and then we infer or presume other facts. And that's what intrigued me about historical fiction,
yeah.
The Mithras conspiracy. The story of an ancient manuscript that threatens the Italian government with a possible coup and raises questions about history and religion.
And religion, because Mithras,
yeah.
Mithras was, and it's your book, but Mithras was an ancient religion, right?
It was. It was a type of, Mithras was the type of savior god who showered benefits on mankind by slaying the bull. Some have seen that as a spiritual symbol of slaying the bull. Others is a more physical ritual. But in any event, the blood of the bull conferred benefits on mankind, the sunlight, the crops, and it became a very prominent cult in the Roman Empire and coexisted for about 200 years with Christianity.
Mm.
And there are certain similarities. In fact, Dr. Martin Luther King, when he was at theological school, wrote a paper comparing Mithraism with Christianity and noticing some of the similarities.
Now, one of the things that distinguishes your book, and it is very much, to my mind, a thriller with a very compelling main character who I think you told me somewhere that this is the first in what you hope to be certainly a second book with the detective,
right,
Marco Leone coming to shoot. Well, the book ends, ladies and gentlemen, with I'm off to see Officer Jim Murphy, and he pulled Murphy's letter. He works for the Chicago Police Department, Office of International Relations. And you ask, one of the characters asked, will I see my American cousin in Chicago? Naturally, she linked her arm with his. You and I are family. But the setting, which is Italy, mostly Rome, you chose this, if I'm not mistaken, as a setting when you were honeymooning in Rome in 2004.
That's correct. The idea came to me, I think it was 2014. We were honeymooning in Rome, and the Da Vinci Code had come out, I think, the year before, 2013. And I realized what a stir that book made.
Oh, my God.
It's been, as you know, criticized by many literary scholars, the writing and the plot, whatever. But it occurred to me the reason the book succeeded, at least one of them, is it deals with questions that people are interested in.
Absolutely.
Where Stan puts it, where do we come from, what are we supposed to do, and where are we going?
Yeah, those grand metaphysical questions. Yeah.
Gets into religion and politics, and that's what the Mithras conspiracy deals with.
Yeah.
The intersection of politics and religion and the force for good or evil that both can do.
Mike Poeli, we got to take a short commercial break, but I want to come back, and then I want to get into the plot of this fine novel, and how difficult it might have been, don't answer now, but how difficult it might have been to write, because writing a novel and getting a novel published is one of the grand, insurmountable adventures of the early 21st century. I want to figure out how Mike went about that. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm on the phone from warm, I'm assuming, Florida. First novelist, Mike Poelli. We had a number of mutual friends, but we'll get into that next time Mike's in Chicago and we sit down and talk face to face. He's written a fine first novel. The Kirkus Review calls it an enjoyable thriller that should make readers wonder what other parts of Italy the author could creatively mine. You do, and I'm assuming, Mike, in the Mithras conspiracy, spent not just a few honeymoon days in Rome, but you have a real feel for that city that I think cannot just come from outside research.
Well, you're absolutely right. I think there are two cities that have most impacted my life. One is Chicago, yeah, the city I grew up in, my native city. And then the city of Rome. I think largely because of my background, I had 6 years of Latin, was a major in history, traveled to Europe a number of times. So both of those cities have seized my imagination, that's correct.
Well, and it's interesting, how difficult was it, Mike, to write this book? I mean, it is, you know, you have an idea for a novel and you have some characters noodling around in your head and you have kind of a plot, then you have to sit down and do it. What was that like for you?
Well, I guess it's Father's Day and maybe it's, you know, it's kind of like having a child.
Yeah.
It's the anguish and the joy at the same time.
Sure.
But the bottom line is I enjoy it. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah.
Now, I don't run for the right for the money. I would never do that because I think it's like buying a lottery ticket, frankly.
Sure.
Going the traditional publishing route.
Sure.
But fortunately, I don't need to.
Right.
I can follow my passion and my interest. And I think that made it easier for me, that I wasn't writing under a gun.
Yeah.
Of economic necessity. It's very difficult because, you know, basically, there are five large conglomerates that decide what gets published in fiction and what doesn't. And fiction has an uphill climb in the United States.
Oh, my God, terrible.
Nonfiction outsells it.
The other thing is you decided to...
But I enjoyed it, basically, and that's what keeps me going.
And you decided to become a writer when the publishing business was at its most chaotic and transformative, and unless you were Stephen King or the aforementioned Scott Turow or John Grisham, it's like almost impossible to get a novel published. Also, I'm going to tell you an inspirational story. Some time ago, a guy called me. His name is Ronald Balson. He said, I've just had a book published. Would you read it? Maybe I'll come on the radio show. He did exactly what you did. He's still a working attorney. He's in his early 70s now. He published a book called When We Were Brothers, published it by himself. It then started to sell modestly through Amazon, eventually selling as many as 500 a month, which is a lot of books. He then, somehow a woman at St. Martin's Press got a hold of it, signed him to a 3-book deal. He has now sold more than 400,000 copies of that book, and I hope the same fate, it's a crapshoot, but I hope the same fate befalls you, because this is a fine, fine, thrilling book. The next one you plan to set in Chicago, do you not, or am I misreading the end of this book?
Well, that's
completely
correct. My current book, by the way, is on Amazon and also Ingram Spark, both online sites, Ingram Spark and Amazon.
That's great.
Second book is laid in Chicago. That's correct.
You have a website too, do you not, Mike?
My website is MJ Polelli. That's P as in Peter, O-L-E-L-L-E.
.com.
My book has two hard words to spell. One is my name and the other is Mithras. Mithras is M-I-T-H-R-A-S.
How empowering was it, and satisfying and empowering, when you held the first copy of the Mithras Conspiracy in your hands?
It was like holding the first baby in your hand in a way.
Yeah, yeah.
It made it worthwhile, especially since I wasn't primarily or even secondarily really concerned about how quickly it was selling. I was just glad I was able to do it. It was kind of like a promise you make to yourself.
Yeah.
When I was practicing, I always had the excuse, I have to make a living. I have to teach my classes. When I retired, I was deprived of an excuse. And then I thought, well, the weather's kind of cold in Chicago. I don't feel like raiding. Then I moved down here. It's very beautiful. Yeah, I was deprived of that excuse. So I ran out of excuses. That's what happened.
Yeah. So you wrote a book. How's the second one coming? It must be because I do. I mean, one of the things that I really sense, not only sort of the narrative, the inherent narrative drive that you possess, but also you really are, you know, Rome is a big element of the book. I'm going to assume that you are sort of joyfully working on the second and joyfully crafting things about Chicago in there.
I am. It should be a bit easier in this sense. You mentioned earlier about the research. My wife and I did spend a week in Rome just doing research on the book.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the most delightful times because I had seen Rome numerous times. We didn't need to do the usual tourist things.
Right.
So I was able to have an archaeologist conduct me to the sites I was writing about. And I was able to talk to the Polizia di Stato, the Rome police.
Rome police, sure.
I'm hoping when it comes to Chicago, I can rely a little bit more on my own experience.
And yeah, you went, I mean, part of the book, I don't want to tell too much, but there's a sort of nasty murder of a childhood friend of the main cop in this thing. And the childhood friend's a priest who works at the Vatican Library. Did you see the Vatican Library?
I did, yes.
What's it like?
It's very imposing. It's like coming into the closet of history.
Yeah.
All kinds of assorted things in helter-skelter fashion. Oh, it's overwhelming, really.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I think that caught my imagination. What else, what other mysteries are in this vast treasure trove called?
I have never been to Rome, but the Rome that I experienced in your book is a very, very kind of dark and dangerous place. I mean, I'm sure the Rome Tourist Council wouldn't want to hear that, but that's the Rome that comes through in your book. It's a mysterious place. Was that your intention?
I think so. Partly because there's layer upon layer of history.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I remember seeing churches built over these old temples. And what were they? And that was my first introduction to the Mithras religion, where hundreds of temples, or underground caves, actually, they worshipped in underground caves, were built under the city and throughout most of the Western Roman Empire.
Had you ever heard of the Mithras religion before you started researching this project?
Only vaguely, and I really knew little about it.
Yeah.
But because of my interest in history and religion and my classical background, it became more interesting as I pursued it.
You sound
because
like
of similarities between the two. It's Martin Luther King noted in his research. Now, for some people, that's very scary, as it was for some of the early Christians.
Oh, I'm sure.
If we're too similar to other people, how are we really different?
Yep.
And others of the same religion say, well, that's a good thing, because we have a lot in common. But
well,
the fundamentals of human kindness, of goodness, are the same.
Well,
so there's constant tension.
And I appreciate you address those kind of big, big questions, those, large questions for which answers are elusive. Another thing that distinguishes your book in the 2 minutes we have left is the short chapters it helps the narrative drive. Was that intentional?
Oh, yeah, it certainly was, Rick. I have to laugh because I grew up reading the classic books.
Yeah, me too.
In my first drafts, the chapters were very long.
Uh-huh.
And then a friend of mine said he likes to read fiction books before he goes to bed because they help put him to sleep, and he likes to read a short chapter. And I thought, well, there may be many reasons to read a book, but apparently people do like short chapters.
I know. It's a real trend in contemporary fiction. Mike Poeli, it's a pleasure to meet you on the phone. Let me know the next time you're in Chicago, and I'll have you live in studio.
Now, Rick, one final thing. This reminds me of the Midnight Express. with Studs Terkel.
Thank you.
Thanks for a touch of old Chicago.
That's an honor. I can't wait to meet you face to face.
Good
luck with the book, The Mithras Conspiracy.
Bye.
Well, that's almost the end of the show. You got to hear a few commercials, and I'll say goodbye.